Hello and welcome to Press TV News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Taqbayi. It's been called the worst sectarian violence between Buddhists and between the extremists and Rohingya Muslims. The UN has long considered them as one of the most persecuted minorities on the planet. So why have they not been proactive in preventing this from happening? They're the Rohingya Muslims, 650 killed in Rakhine State over the past few months, over 100 killed in recent attacks by Buddhist monks, although the government later revised down the deaths. About 1,200 others missing, 80,000 more to have been displaced. These stateless Muslim descendants of Persian, Turkish, Bengali, and Pathan origins, and why they are being ethnically cleansed is the subject of this news analysis. Let me introduce our guests for this. We have the program manager for Statelessness Refugees International, Sarnata Reynolds, who joins us via Skype from Washington. President of the Arakan Rohingya National Organization, Nurul Islam, who joins us from London. Also president of Conscience International, James Jennings, who joins us from Atlanta. And the Middle East and South Asia director from Stratford, Kamran Wakhari, who joins us from London. I'd like to welcome all our guests. Let me start with you, Sarnata Reynolds. Since you have been to Myanmar in September, you talked about what has occurred there. And what is interesting and something that I'd like for you to point out is the fact that these are large-scale state-sponsored violence against these people, as you mentioned. If you can also elaborate on that, and of course, what you saw.
Yes, so we were there. We were in Bangladesh and Myanmar for most of September, and what we saw were a lot of people displaced, both Rohingya and Rakhine, but in particular, the capital of Rakhine State. We saw between 75 and 90,000 displaced Rohingya who were segregated outside of town. They had been moved outside of town to an area that was not prepared to receive them. The conditions were terrible. Water and sanitation there wasn't enough, and to the extent that there was water and sanitation, it wasn't in a situation where it could be kept clean. The nutrition situation was terrible, and there were children who were acutely malnourished and very shocking. And, of course, the whole issue of segregation itself was of great concern. The original movement, we were told, was for security reasons to separate the Rakhine and Rohingya population. But we're almost 5 months into this situation now with no indication that things are going to change, and certainly no articulation from the government of how reintegration would happen between the both populations.
James Jennings, again, to set the landscape, this is what Rohingya.org stated in terms of what is occurring there. You have 1,000 houses that have been burned down, hundreds of Muslims, Rohingya Muslims killed, and of course the injuries and them being evicted. Tell us your reaction to the depth of the violence that is exercised against these Muslims.
Actually, I just returned from Myanmar last week, and the fact is that the violence is continuing even yesterday and today, and the number of people were killed. I think the most striking thing is that both in July and also in this month, there have been 2,000 houses in each event that were burned, which means the people are dispersed, and there are already 60 to 70,000 people from the original number of 100,000 that were driven out of their homes that are still in the camps, and so it's going to be more camps added to that. I think there are underlying problems, and I was there with my organization, Conscience International, doing community development projects, but we were not in Rakhine Province. I did interview one of the members of the government's commission, which is investigating the situation. He was not very willing to talk about it because they have to make another visit and examine the situation. I think the two things are really at issue here. One is the issue of citizenship. In a world in which nations are organized along national lines, it is impossible, it is unconscionable that any people should be denied citizenship. And yet these people, of the 1.7 million Muslims in Myanmar, about 4% of the population, these people in Rakhine Province are a lot fewer than that, maybe 800,000. But Bangladesh does not want them, and Myanmar does not want them. And there's agitation by the Buddhist majority, and some of the Muslim-hating Buddhist monks are leading protests even today. So the citizenship should be solved, that issue. And I think that the other issue is the fledgling democracy that Myanmar is engaged in building. And actually, Prime Minister Thein Sein has, I think, come to a very reasonable idea. At first, he was saying they should be sent to Myanmar. Then he said they should be put in camps. Now he's saying they can be given citizenship if they can prove their parentage and it goes back two generations. That would be difficult to do, but at least it's the right start on the problem, and that idea would be a good one to pursue. But the danger is that this will militarize the situation in such a way that the entire 50 million people in Myanmar will be threatened of the loss of their democratic rights.
Well, you touched on a number of points there. I'd like to get to some of them, but before that, just the way this was reported, Kamran Bukhari, is very enlightening. Let's look at the way, for example, when we're seeing what has occurred compared to, for example, a Pakistani girl that was shot, of how the media picked up on that. But here we have all these deaths occurring. Why is it that the media is picking and choosing one girl over all these deaths that are occurring in the same area of the world?
Well, it's very simple, because the media is a business, and you know, depending on which media we're talking about, there will be emphasis on one story over the other. Clearly, the AFPAC region, as it's called in North America, is sort of taking center stage, in addition to the Arab Spring, and so issues like the Muslims of Myanmar and who are neither in Myanmar and as citizens as my co-panelists just pointed out, and they're not, neither welcome in Bangladesh. An issue like that really doesn't sort of register in terms of the sort of the editorial policy. I guess if there were a shortage of issues elsewhere, this would pick up, and at some point it becomes a fatigue. I mean, I recall a few months ago this was getting a lot of traction in the international media. But it all depends on the timing. I mean, if there are other issues that are considered more burning, then obviously issues that are not considered as equally important won't get a whole lot of coverage.
Sonata Reynolds, since, again, based on your visit there, if we can expand more of how you think the government is dealing with this. You talked about the state sponsorship, and of course the different reports indicating that it is as such. But looking at the government of Myanmar, its Buddhist majority, it refuses to recognize the rights of these Rohingyas. They actually classify them as illegal migrants, even though they're descendants there. So how can the Rohingya Muslims have anyone come and basically stand up for their rights when you have the government there that is against them? It seems like it's somewhat a bleak situation for them there.
I think oblique is the right word to use. It's a very difficult situation for them. As you said, and as I said yesterday, there's no question that there was local and state participation or acquiescence in the violence and the burning and the displacement of the Rohingya. It's not as clear if the military or the national security was involved. And as I said before, we were actually told by some Rohingya that they would feel safer if national security was there. That is something that is completely missing right now and is a huge issue on the city, for the townships and the cities outside of Sitwe, where, as you've discussed, there are new burnings, new displacement, and killings taking place without the presence of national security. It is absolutely the government's responsibility to put national security there. There is no excuse for not doing so, stating that they're an illegal migrant population, which of course is not true. But even if it was true, there is a slaughter taking place, there is a displacement of thousands taking place, and that government has a responsibility to protect the people who are harmed.
And, of course, the government is not doing that, Nurul Islam. Tell us, on October 15th, the Myanmar government actually prevented the OIC from opening this office for the Rohingya Muslims. Why did they retract that? Why did the president do that? And interesting when he said, this is not in accordance, and I'm quoting him, with the people's desire, which puts into question, why is it that the Rohingya Muslims are hated so much by the general public there? Okay, let me ask this from James Jennings.
To figure that out, but essentially there's been agitation going back for some time. 1978, 1991, almost a quarter million Rohingyas were forced out into Bangladesh. In July, the Prime Minister of Bangladesh, Sheikh Hasina, said that she didn't want any of those Rohingyas coming there because Bangladesh is already overpopulated. They already have 300,000 Rohingyas in camps and they can't deal with them. But I think there's been agitation from some of the Buddhist leaders because they see their national identity as being threatened. I'm struck by the fact that in the U.S. we have a similar problem. It has not reached the same level of violence, but even members of U.S. Congress are in favor of expelling any of those Latinos or Hispanics who come to America and don't have passports. And so this problem is in more than one place in the world. However, this is a crucial issue because of the citizenship that these people deserve who have been there for such a long time. I just read a book from 1835, and they were describing the conflict that was going on there in that Rakhine province because of the strong cultural identity and history that the Buddhists of that province have. So it's an ongoing issue, and as I say, the citizenship issue is appalling that it's not being addressed. It must be addressed. And the other thing is that the fledgling democracy, if there's any hope for a solution that's not a military solution, the fledgling democracy in Myanmar must be protected.
I'm sorry, but this is not convincing me, and I'm sure it's not convincing a lot of viewers there, Kamran Bukhari, of why this is going on. We could look at facts. There's about 135, based on research done, ethnicities that live in Myanmar. It doesn't explain the fact of why they're being treated this way. If there's a question of where they come from, they've been living there for all this time. Again, doesn't explain why they have to be treated. We're talking about women being raped, there's executions, and there's very gory details behind some of the killings that have taken place. So people are asking, why?
Well, I mean, there's never a one answer or a good answer for why to any conflict. You know, there's no shortage of conflict around the world, especially in that part of the world. I mean, we're having a huge conflict in Syria, and one can ask the same question, why is it happening? But to answer your question, the issue is very simple. I mean, there's a group of people that have no place, and they're sort of shuttling between two nation states, both of whom do not want them, or at least not in large numbers. And if they do allow them to come in, they place a great deal of restrictions on them, which any government would do given from its security point of view. I mean, if you look at it from the point of view of Dhaka, the Bangladeshi government, as one of the panelists rightfully pointed out, you know, is a poor country. I mean, they don't have the resources. And the fear is that if you allow X number of these people to come in and settle down, then that sets a precedent. And somewhere they have to draw the line from their national security point of view. Likewise, I mean, the authorities in Myanmar, and I'd like to point out that I do see a difference in the way the Myanmar government is viewing these people and those Buddhist forces that are clashing with these Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. So there's sort of the center-local divide. I seriously don't think that they're on the same page, because from the point of view of the Myanmar government, yes, they'd like to be able to contain the number of refugees that come in from Bangladesh, or people, you know, who are undocumented and trying to make a permanent home in Myanmar. But at the same time, it's not in the interest of the Myanmar government, the central government, or even the local authorities to see such violence escalate, because it destabilizes that part of the country, and then it could spread from there to other adjacent parts. So it becomes a bigger problem for the government. But I think that the government is having a hard time sort of dealing with both interests. Interest in containing this issue, which sort of intersects with the local Buddhist interest, and at the same time making sure that this violence doesn't spread.
Well, let me bring in Nurul Islam from London. He's the president of the Arakan Rohingya National Organization. If you heard our guest there, do you agree with him in terms of his description of the government? Nurul Islam?
Yes.
Okay, we had our guests talk about the fact that the government is juggling between the interests of the people and their own interests. We've had guests and we have accounts that are stating that the government is behind some of the killings that are taking place, some of the violence that is taking place. What is your take on that? And of course, tell us what is exactly happening and how can the international community, due to their lack of action, be involved? I've cited OIC in this case that has been rejected for having an office in Myanmar. What else can be done?
Well, this is, first of all, I want to stress that this is not a clash between two people. This is a state-sponsored exterminations of the Rohingya people. And the government forces are, the government is not manifestly failing to protect the Rohingya people, but also they are a potential force. They are an active force behind the persecution of the Rohingya people. And Rohingya become completely protectionless and helpless in the country. They are killed, and their houses and their villages are burned down, and in some places completely, of the Rohingya people, some areas. Within 24 hours, and then there are several, in several places, many houses have been destroyed. In Chokto area, 200 people are buried in a mass grave, and many people are now floating, and on the river, and then the seas, and then this is a completely terrible situation is now prevailing, and then this is in the essence of the national protection. We have appealed to the international community, who are the only hope for us to protect the Rohingya people. But until now, we don't receive any positive response. If this situation continues this way, Rohingya people will be finished soon, before the very eyes of the international community.
Well, Senator Reynolds, I have to hold my breath when I just heard our guest, our Nurul Islam. Tell us your reaction to that. And please tell us, the U.S. and the West has opened up trade routes in terms of opening up opportunities there, but they have set a precondition for the governments in terms of holding up human rights. They surely can do something. They surely can exercise on the U.N. their influence. Why aren't they doing that, especially after hearing our guest, Nurul Islam?
Sure. I'd like to answer that question, but I also just wanted to clarify a comment that was made before, the idea that the Rohingya are somehow a migrant population that are moving back and forth between Bangladesh and Burma. That's just not the case. The Rohingya they're a recognized citizen of Burma until the 1970s. There were conflicts and tensions prior to that, but it was at that point that they all actually had their nationality stripped away. What we're actually talking about here is a population that's nationality has been stripped to them, and the reinforcement or the enforcement of of their right to nationality. That's what we're talking about here. This is not a foreign population. And I also wanted to say about Bangladesh, it does talk about this as a security concern, and that's fine. It's not registering the people that are entering the country. If Bangladesh is serious about this being a security concern, then Bangladesh should be registering people and giving them an opportunity to receive humanitarian assistance from the organizations that are there who are more than willing to do so, instead of actually telling them to leave the country. In terms of what my co-panelist said, it is shocking and it's terrible. And we receive reports every day from people in Rakhine State that are telling us the same sorts of stories. And one of the big problems here, one of the reasons that the international community is not rallying and is not providing the type of support to the people and assistance is because of this issue of segregation, that there has been a decision to segregate the Rohingya from their hometown, from Sitre town, and there's a concern about funding it. They don't want to fund what is basically, could come, a ghetto and a permanent segregation. I know that there are strong discussions taking place. I'm aware of some of the diplomatic overtures that are taking place. But at the same time, you've brought the issue of sanctions up, or the lifting of sanctions. And I agree, that's a problem. It wouldn't, if the political reform that's taking place in Burma is real, and I hope so, then lifting the sanctions at this point, when they haven't demonstrated a commitment to human rights, both in Rakhine State, but also in Kachin and in Chin State, there are still huge human rights violations taking place. I don't know that that was, it certainly took some of the teeth out of the U.S. ability to support the structure of human rights there. And if I can make one other comment, actually, and again, I'm going back to something that was said before, I just wanted to clarify it, was that the underlying issue here, although, of course, there is a pervasive dislike of the Rohingya population throughout Burma, and it's sort of striking how pervasive it is given the human rights violations that everyone has suffered, most people have suffered, though, over the last few decades. It's happening now partly because of the political and economic reform that's happened in Burma. The president hasn't said that he hasn't ruled out the idea that Rohingya will be provided with nationality. And that is causing great concern in the Rakhine community, because if they are allowed to be counted in the census, which is supposed to be in 2014 in preparation for the elections in 2015, and they are recognized as nationals.
I apologize, Sarnata Reynolds. We're unfortunately out of time. Thank you very much for your comments. That was Sarnata Reynolds. Also, Nur al-Islam from London, president of the Arakan Rohingya National Organization. We had Dr. James Jennings, president of the Conscious International, and also Kamran Bukhari from Mideast and South Asia, director from Stratford. Thank you. And also you, the viewer, thank you for watching another edition of the Press TV News Analysis. From Mikhail Tafoy and the entire team, it's goodbye.